You're listening to a recording from the Open Society Institute, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
I'm Anthony Richter, Associate Director of the Open Society Institute. I'd like to welcome everyone this evening to our program with the Baghdad Film School. The program is co-sponsored with Art East, whose director, Olivia Alexander, is here. As the OSI person responsible for the event, I just want to take the opportunity to welcome you and to explain our connection with the proceedings. The program that I direct on our work in the Middle East and North Africa has been among the supporters of the Baghdad Film School from its inception a few years ago, and it's always been one of the high points of my job in recent years to be in touch with Qasem Abed and Mehsun Pachachi and get the latest crop of films which result from the school they conduct. And so tonight's a very pleasant opportunity for me to be able to have OSI host them and for them to share those films with you as well. The work of the Baghdad Film School falls into kind of two types of concerns of OSI's. First of all, one generally of bearing witness to the invasion of Iraq, the occupation, and unfortunately the dispersal of so many people as IDPs and refugees. And second, the work of the Baghdad Film School is part of an overall support that we give to creative people in the Arab region, most recently with the establishment of our support for the establishment of a Arab Fund for Arts and Culture. Livia, if you want to say anything, this is your opportunity. Otherwise, I'm just going to invite either Mehsun or Qasem to just say a couple of words about what we'll be seeing. Livia? Thank you. And so overall, we're going to go for about an hour. And then have a discussion. And then Mehsun or Qasem, would you like to come up and introduce, tell us what we're going to see this evening?
First of all, I'd like to thank very much OSI and Anthony in particular for supporting us incredibly since the beginning of our efforts. I mean, it's the films you'll see tonight and the other seven films that our students have produced simply wouldn't have happened. They wouldn't have been possible without their support. What we're showing you tonight, we've made 11 films. Our students have made 11 films so far under very difficult circumstances. Everything has taken a great deal longer than we imagined that it would. But they've been very dogged and committed, and they have produced these 11 films. And what we're going to show you tonight is one film from the first documentary course that we did, which was completed at the end of 2005, and is a sort of a video diary of a young woman who comes from Kirkuk and comes to Baghdad to complete her last year of college and makes a diary of her year. The other three films were completed in the most recent documentary film course, which ended in 2007. End of 2007, which is there's a film called A Candle for the Shahbandar Cafe, which is about a cafe and in a very old part of Baghdad, and about the filmmaker who made the film and what happened to him. There is a film, and then there's a film called A Stranger in His Own Country about someone who's been displaced from the north of the country because of sectarian violence to a refugee camp within Iraq into the south. The first two films are longer. The first film is just over half an hour. The second film is about 23 minutes. and the third film is 10 minutes. And we'd be very happy to have a discussion, answer questions, whatever, afterwards. Thank you.
I realized that I was negligent. I'm supposed to read some kind of pro forma announcement, just reminding all the panelists and the audience when the discussion comes to speak it loudly into microphones, because the event is being recorded for a podcast broadcast on our website subsequently, and there'll be some short clips from the films. Then I'm supposed to point out the nearest emergency exit, which is out this way. Not that you'll need it, but that's why it's called an emergency exit. And I've told you it's going to be recorded. So without further ado.
I'd like now to welcome Maysoom Pachachi and Qasim Abid. Thank Maysoom and Qasim for making those films available to us, and I'm sure you have many questions for them. Before we actually begin, there was one thing I wanted to mention at the beginning of the session, is that Maysoom and Qasim are going to be on NPR on a Leonard Lopit show this Friday at 12:40, and I hope you can also tell your friends about this program and listen to the interview on Friday. So I was actually hoping that maybe you can start with some kind of a presentation of how this school maybe came about, and then a little bit about the changes that have happened since you started this program.
Well, we started this school in 2004. Before that, in June 2003, Qasim and I were in Ramallah. We were sitting in a cafe in Ramallah in Palestine, where we had been teaching at Bir Zeit University. And over about a period of 10 years, he and I were colleagues and went back and forth to Palestine and would teach short intensive courses of about a month or 2 months at a time. And when we were sitting in this cafe in June 2003, we thought, okay, the country has been invaded, it's been occupied, and what can we do? Both of us had lived outside the country for many, many years. And we weren't doctors, we weren't engineers, we weren't anything useful like that, we were filmmakers. So we decided the only thing that we could do was to use the experience that we had as documentary filmmakers and also as teachers of film in difficult circumstances. The difficult circumstances in Palestine, where people sometimes couldn't get into classes, where they had to negotiate checkpoints, where people got arrested, where tanks were on the streets sometimes, and so forth. Despite all that, our Palestinian students made it in to work, to do their work and to produce their films. And now, I mean, we started doing this work in 1994, and now, many years later, there is a Palestinian voice in the cinema, not because of our work, but because there was a lot of people doing the same sort of thing. So we decided that we would use our experience, which had encouraged us, the results of that, to try to do the same thing in Iraq, basically. So we set up a non-profit company and began working in Iraq. And Qasim went back to Iraq for the first time in more than 30 years, I think, toward the end of 2003, and kind of floated the idea to see if there was a response from people, if this is something that people actually wanted to do, or it was just some whim of ours. And there was a very positive response. And we were very aware from the beginning that we didn't want to go back, like a lot of Iraqis who'd been in exile for many years went back, thinking they had the answers to everything and telling the population there what they should do and how they should do it. We absolutely didn't want to be part of that situation. And so we went back offering the experience that we had and exchanging experience with our students. And so we set up. So I don't know if you want to... the first course we gave was in 2004, and Qasim gave it. It was in camera sound and lighting. It was... went on for a month, and the school is free of charge. We don't charge anybody, which is why we're incredibly grateful for the support from OSI, and which meant we could carry on and do it. And we and that for that course we could advertise. We could put an announcement in papers and people in the newspapers, and people could send CVs in, and then we could do interviews with them. And we chose people, and they did. By the time we came to do the first documentary course, out of which the first film by the young woman Hiba was made, it was no longer possible to do that. The security situation had deteriorated, and we realized we had to work in a very low-profile way. And so it was much more word of mouth. We would go, you know, put notices in universities and arts centers and so forth, and people would tell people about the course, and eventually we gather our students together. So we have done that first camera, sound and lighting course, the first documentary course, which was meant to take 3 months and in fact took a year, and then the second documentary course, out of which the second lot, two films came, which we've just finished. And we've arrived at a point now where there was an exponential growth of violence in Baghdad, especially after the bombings in Samarra in February 2006. And it became, toward the end of that year, really impossible to carry on there. There were explosions very near the school. All the glass was blown out in the whole building. People were kidnapped from our building. We had to close down for a while. Qasim's brother got killed, nothing to do with the school, but that's the level of violence that there was. And so we are now trying to relocate temporarily to Syria, probably, where there's a huge number of Iraqi refugees, 1.5 million, and to bring students from Iraq, and half of them will come from the refugee community in Syria, if we can get official permission. So that's where we are now. Maybe you can talk about the conditions.
Well, yeah. Well, the first course was, as Maysoon mentioned, that in 2004. But it was like a test for us. It just we wanted to know whether we can be working there or not, whether we'll be able to do something there or not. So we passed that test, but we learned a lot from the situation there. We learned that the biggest problem which we face is the security there. So I have to keep low profile in Baghdad, far away from all media and all, just to protect myself there, and so I can carry on with our program and our training. At the same time, how we train, like we train people how to use the camera, how to use the microphone, how to record the sound, how to work with the light. So the only way which we found to use the roof of the building, and at the roof of the building we rented on the third floor two rooms. This is all the college at the beginning was just office block and office block, two rooms we rented. And after we painting the rooms and fixing the plumbers and everything, and we start, work with the young Iraqi filmmakers. We took them at the roof, and then we start, working with the camera among all satellites, dishes, and slabs, and all these things. And as well, train them on the sound. But it works. By the end of the day, we could achieve something. The second thing, we had few girls to study in our college. After the war, the level of violence was dramatically increased against women. So girls used to either their relative or brothers or friends to brought them to the college and pick up them from the college. If that was impossible, we could have do it by ourselves. So I or anybody from the college give them lift. So in that way, we managed to achieve something at the beginning. Obviously, the rest is you continue. It's a big challenge. to live in Baghdad, it's not like to live in the West. It's a challenge to go to the market. It's a challenge to take your children to the school. It's a challenge to do small things, daily life you want to carry on. It's a big challenge because you don't know. I mean, if you are at the wrong time and at the wrong place, that's it, you will be finished. Few seconds might be save your life, few seconds sometimes. But I and Maysoon, from the beginning, after the war, there were a lot of discussion among Iraqis, what to do, how to help Iraqis. I mean, Iraqis living abroad, living in exile, like me, like Maysoon. Some of them, they said, no, we're just waiting until things settle down. I and Maysoon decided, no, just we need to do something. If we need to help Iraqis, we must be started, not wait. So that's where, you know, the college started, and that's where we saw the beginning.
We should open the floor for the questions. There's a mic here. Right ahead, if anyone wants to step up to the mic.
I was just wondering if
you have to speak in the mic.
I have to go to the mic now.
It's being recorded, so they need to hear it.
I was just wondering if people, the general population in Iraq, are open as becoming subjects for the films being made, or are they very suspicious of Iraqis coming and asking them to be part of their films?
Well, I think this has changed to some extent. I mean, I think there was always a certain kind of circumspection. People were always a bit worried. They wanted to know who you were. When I was there in 2004, I made it, the first time I went back after 35 years of being away. I was able to walk around the streets and go to the markets and so forth with my camera and film people I'd never seen before and had never seen me before. And at the beginning, there was always a sort of, who are you? But you could establish a kind of conversation with people. And I was there just holding a camera by myself. I didn't have a crew with me. I didn't have even a sound recorder with a boom and all that kind of stuff. So I didn't look professional. And I was very open to people asking me questions. Who are you? Where have you come? Why are you here? You know, all that sort of business. Now, if one tries to do that, it would be absolutely impossible to do that film now. You couldn't. People are very, very wary of people with cameras. I mean, if as Kasim was saying yesterday, that if you're shooting on the street. I mean, on the one hand, you could be somebody who's gathering evidence for the various militias or the, quote, terrorists or somebody who will want to plant a bomb there at some point. And so people are very uptight about it. And this is just sort of random, so this isn't people being a subject of the film, you know. Or are you working for the Americans? That's the other thing. Are the cameras instruments for spying? So that's very difficult. I mean, I have a friend who was shooting that some material for me in Iraq. She was shooting from the back seat of a car with a small camera. She was stopped by five different militias, you know, and really hassled about it. So people are sometimes people were willing to be in films, and then they would get a bit worried.
Well, these films has been done by our students, just because we advise them to choose only one location, basically, or to choose safe location. We won't be able to protect anyone, and always we working on the story, which is not going. We are not interested to film, on the street like American or tanks or whatever, but we want story from the inside. From the inside society, from the inside Iraqi families, so people will understand, how the Iraqis managed to live in this difficult period of their life. So this is what, At the moment, it's really difficult. It's really difficult to get a camera and go on the street filming. It's as Mason said, it's everybody think that you are a spy, spying for one group or another. But it's always as well, you know, sort of trust. If people trust you, if people know you, if you people think that, you know, especially when you are a local, you are not coming from another country or working for the satellite TV station or something. So people could, if they trust you, they can, you know, can talk to you and can allow you to make the story.
I'm sorry, if you can just step up to the microphone, please.
Hello, I enjoyed the films very much. I was wondering what kind of filmmaking, independent filmmaking, there was in Iraq before the US invasion in 2003?
Virtually none. Mm-hmm. Virtually none. I mean, there was no kind of filmmaking for 35 years that was possible without government surveillance. So independent film, I mean, it was very difficult for people even to make clandestine films, especially in the last 13 years, where the sort of murderous sanctions that were imposed on the country meant, among other things, that there was no camera equipment. If a camera broke down, you couldn't fix it. There was no film stock. There were no labs. There was no digital equipment. So it was very difficult, even if people wanted to make films in secret, which is very hard to do. It's not like writing a book. You can write a book and hide it away and distribute it clandestinely. It's very difficult to do that with films. But there was virtually no independent filmmaking at all.
May I have a follow-up question? this is a bit high for me. No, I was wondering how whether your school was, you immediately got a response, and how many students you had at the outset, and whether some were, you know, what the gender balance was.
There was a lot of response at the beginning, but each of our courses is about 20 to 25 people, and one of the guidelines or one of the rules we've made for ourselves is that at least a quarter of each course should be women. And so far, we've been able to do that. But in the last course, for example, several women had to drop out because they simply couldn't get in. It was too dangerous. So that it's something that concerns us both a lot, you know. And the other thing that we wanted to do was that half of each course should come from Baghdad and half should come from the provinces. That has been completely impossible. I mean, there have been a few people who've come, like the guy who made the last film. He comes from Karbala, and he would you know, commute up. But our idea was to bring people from the provinces and house them for 3 months while they did the course. But it's been, the security situation hasn't allowed that.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
The question is, how are you funded?
We fund it from charities and foundations and trade unions and individual donations. And we've had a remarkable number of small individual donations, and every little bit helps. And this institute, the Open Society Institute, has been absolutely essential to our being able to function. We never have enough money. It's always hand to mouth. I mean, we had these big plans when we first set up. You know, a three-year plan, we'll buy this equipment on the first year, we'll do this. Of course, none of that has been possible. And so we just go course by course and try to raise money for it that way. We're always begging.
I think it's a good opportunity to mention that I don't think there will be any no to contributions to this school, and we would love to encourage you, either personally or any other connections you might have, to contribute to this school.
Can you talk about your plans for working in Syria? Who you want to work with, what you want to achieve, and what challenges you think you'll face?
Well, because of situation in Baghdad, we left Iraq in the middle of 2006. Last year, we brought students to Damascus, students who finished those, some, the first, the second and the third film was a part of that third documentary course. We brought them to, after they finishing their shooting and the rushes were ready to edit it, we brought them to Damascus and we edited the films there. And our plan, it's not to stay in Syria or in Jordan because we would like to be there. We would like to train, you know, young Iraqis. And but if the situation settled down a little bit, and we keep our finger crossed that, you know, by September or October, if it become a little bit less violence in Baghdad, we might return back. And we started there because our college is still there. Obviously, I said two rooms, but now we have five rooms. So we expanded. So that's the thing. We are, because of the situation, we try to run a course in Damascus. But it's very difficult to get permission from Syrian government to do that course. First of all, because the question about refugees, Iraqi refugees in Damascus is very sensitive for Syrian government. And we have been in touch and with many people there, which we know. Up to the deputy minister or deputy cultural minister. But we couldn't get, you know, anything. Everybody saying, okay, it's great, it's fine, and you know, but talk to another one. That might be help you. And we got another one. And that one suggested something else. And we just in vicious circle, as simple as that. That's why we thinking that in September, if things settle down, we go back. We don't want anybody to make a favor for us.
We are trying to work, though, with UNHCR, United Nations High Commission for Refugees in Syria, and hoping that we can work with them and as part of their program, and that might also help us to get the permissions that we need. But it's a sort of be patient and improvise situation.
I wonder if you could speak a little bit about the work that you shared with them, since they've not had the opportunity to see documentary work locally produced. What kind of images did you show them? What kind of models from within the Middle East did you share? A lot of this work has a kind of testimonial feel to it. There's a harmonic quality, and I just wondered what the influences were on the work that they made.
Obviously, we are both of us filmmakers. I am a cameraman, trained as a cameraman and director, Maysoon as director and excellent editor. So we are basically share between me and Maysoon the course. Preparation period and shooting period, almost I will be controlling that part of work. And Maysoon get the post-production as soon as the rush is ready, start. We train three kind of filmmakers: direction, cameraman, sound and lighting, and editing. So each three or four people must make a crew, team, to make a film. We take the student. These students, most of them, they are graduated from art academy, but they have no experience in making a film. They are educated people, but they have no simply experience how to make a film. We work with them on the project. We take you to make a film. If you cannot do the film, don't come to us. So on that basis, method, I don't know. We teach our experience. Simply we teach our experience. But we are with them from A to Z. I mean, from the idea which they bring it to the class. And we discuss it and we start sharing. Everybody in the class say what you want to say. And then we starting to forming the story. and find out, you know, beginning, ending, you know, structure, all these characters. And then when they come start shooting, they bring the rushes and I watch it. If it is good enough, I say, okay, that's fine. If not good enough, go back and do it again until they bring the right things which we needed for editing. And as soon as we find that there is enough rushes to make a story, so that the film will say, okay, that will be, you know, on the first stage to go to editing. But as Mason said, we plan sometimes for 12 weeks to finish the course. We end it with 1 year or more than a year. And that takes a long time from us. First of all, we are always with a problem with funding because we haven't enough. We're planning for 12 weeks, 3 months, 3.5, and then we ended for 12 months, more than 12 months. Plus, sometimes the situation change and you have to take them outside Baghdad to another country. So you have to look for money to pay for their accommodation, pay for their travel. And the last time, all you know, the student, they didn't come through the road. They come by airplane. So you have to pay for each one $700 to bring it from Baghdad to Syria and bring it back from Syria to Baghdad. Plus the expense. They don't pay anything because we are committed not to take from them money. So sometimes I and Mason, basically last year, she get paid for 1 month and I get paid for 2 months. For the whole year, and this from the beginning this year up nowadays, we don't make living from the school. We just want to make something, you know. We want to achieve something which can, you know, worthwhile. But we achieved. I mean, apart from that, our achievement, we have done the Channel 4 in Britain. They commissioned us to make 4 3-minute. 3 minutes from each film which we have been shown. They have a slot, it's called 3 minutes.
3 minute wonder.
Three minute wonder after the news. They commissioned us to do that. Al Jazeera International English Language, they commissioned us 3 films to do for them. Our films has been shown more than 20 countries in the world. Next month, 6 of our students invited to Gold Film Festival to show their films, and they invite the directors and you know, the films, and so it has been shown recently in Germany, in Hamburg, in Syria, in Jordan, Holland.
Holland.
So we are always get emails from different parts of the world want to show these films. They are a bit rough, but they are honest. And that's what people like it.
Just wanted to say something that it's extremely moving to be here and to see these films, partly because these are images we never see here. I know when Maysoon, I'm a friend of Maysoon's, but when she was here before, some people who saw the films just were stunned because we see so many newscasts about the Iraq War, about the deaths of U.S. soldiers. It's always said no one knows but the number of Iraqis or what Iraqis are doing or anything, and you're bringing that to us. And I'm especially moved that you did it in time to capture Al-Mutanabe Street, if I'm saying that correctly, and so that we could see the culture, the rich culture that's there, the stones, the ancient stones, and the man who knows all the history, and then what happened to him in this struggle. And I guess it's, I want to have hope, as he did after all that happened, that something can come there, although this was a wrong war, whatever you want to think about it. But it's really important work that you're doing, and you did it at the right time so that we could see the destruction and maybe some creation, because this is creation too. Thank you.
Thank you. Just in 1991, when the first Gulf War happened, I mean, I and all the other Iraqi exiles sat in all over the world, but I mean, I was in London, you know, watching the TV every night. And there were thousands of hours of media coverage, and all you ever saw was these video game images of, quote, smart bombs falling on this or that or blowing up a bridge. And you never saw, on British TV, you didn't see one ordinary Iraqi person speak. You didn't. It was as if the country was empty, and the whole country was just Saddam Hussein, and that there were no people there, and that there was no history, and there was no culture, there was no people suffering there, there was no everyday life, there was nothing. And I realized, it really made me feel that it made that absence in the media of any kind of human dimension, made the war much easier to accept. It was, people just accepted it, because of course they didn't have to think about this incredible firepower falling on anybody like them. And it made me make a film. And my response was to make a film, is what I know how to do. So I made a film, which was a film about Iraqi women talking about their experiences, and it was sort of like a history of the country through the experiences of women. And I think that that sense has driven us both along, that actually there has to be, not just about Iraq, but about people everywhere in the world, that there are unspeakable things happening all over the world, and they are literally unspeakable because the people to whom they're happening have no voice. And so it's partly to bring that to the screen, and it's not just to depict them as victims. I mean, what you see now, there's more coverage. You see more Iraqi people, but what do you see? You see an explosion. You see the aftermath of an explosion. You see fire and smoke. You see a woman beating her breast and crying because her son or somebody has died. But who is this woman, and what is this street on which this happened? It's nothing. And that kind of abstraction that happens makes it something that you don't have to deal with. It's just become, oh, isn't it terrible, and you can switch the channel. But if you have a sense of people living an ordinary life into the midst of which erupts this catastrophic violence or just ordinary violence or just ordinary anything, then you have a sense of people like yourself. And I get very angry with the media coverage of Iraq and all kinds of other places as well, because it's very manipulative, and it's very retrograde and very awful. Words fail me.
I have two questions. The first one is about your interaction with these students, and whether it was full of, like, how was it like working with these students, given that even taking a shower is a problem, it takes a whole day. So was there like kind of tension, or just people are tired, don't want to continue, and like whether there was any tension, the fact that you came from abroad and they are inside, so like the interaction between you and the students. And the second question is about how can you deal with all this material, like on a daily basis, to edit this footage? Like, it's so hard, like you've been living through this for years, so how is it like at the personal level for you to see all this footage all the time?
The first question.
It's about the interaction with the students. Yeah. Did they worry about you coming from abroad? And
well, yeah, they know. They know we are, you know, living in abroad, and we attend to come to set up the college there. But the student, you know, once, you know, Baghdad, once you are going with your initiative, with your idea, and you want to set something, you know, useful for them, they will trust you. I mean, from the beginning when they started to come to the college, and I started to talk to them and explain to them what the aim of our college and what our goal in this college, and they saw, you know, day after day, we are really honest with them, and we want to help them. Even we don't advertise because of the security situation. We don't, only the first time we make one advertisement in the newspaper in 2004, when was everything is more or less. But after that, we didn't advertise anything. But once we say we are going to make this course or that course, that's, you know, the between the young people, they start, you know, spread them all the information. And the last course, you know, third course, it's more than 75 students. They came to the college. They want to study. I mean, obviously, the last course was just a few days before the bombing of Shiite Shrine in Samarra. And that was really difficult for me to stay there and continue. And I didn't know what to do, whether I stay or whether I leave. Then I start to talk to the student one by one. Do you want to study? Do you want to continue? The situation, the security situation collapsed completely. The violence and the sectarian and the religious, and it's increased dramatically. And I start to ask them one by one. And it's amazing. All of them, they say, yes, we want to continue. So this is the sort of, you know, I mean, they are really risking their life to come to the college, because some of them, they're living far away from the college. And every morning, coming to the college and going back. One student said to me that, I'm honestly every day kiss my mom and dad before I leave, just in case I'm not returning. This is the situation.
I think the question about how do you deal with this material, it's very, I think most Iraqis are in a state of shock and are mentally not in a very good state, traumatized. I mean, whether you're there or you're outside, I mean, I live a comfortable life, I live outside, my life is intact, but I'm traumatized as well. And I think actually, you know, what can you do in the face of all this destruction? It can either paralyze you completely, or the world is being sort of unmade in front of your very eyes, basically, and inside you. Sometimes it seems that the only thing you can do is to try to make something from this, is to try to, the only way to get past that destruction is to put things back together again. And that is obviously a lot to do with creative work. And I think for a lot of people, I mean, just speaking personally, actually, if I weren't doing this or trying to make films about Iraq, I would go crazy. I would go crazy, because what can you do? Sit and watch the television and cry all the time? I mean, and I think so. There is a kind of selfish aspect to this, which is to do is it's like to do something. And what you're doing is a نقطة بالبحر. يعني it's a drop in the ocean. It really literally. I mean, it's just a tiny little thing, but it kind of keeps you going, I think. But it is difficult to deal with the material, and it's difficult to. And it's not just the material. It's the experiences that the students bring to you. I mean, and you wonder how people. I mean, Hiba, the girl who made the first film, for example. She talks about her sister who lost her job and was looking for... Well, the sister finally found another job with a radio station that was just beginning. And one day, they both went into work. Hiba was working as a cultural show presenter on TV. And her sister went into the radio station. And they got in, and some minutes later, the sister phoned her, and she was hysterical. She couldn't speak. So Hiba found a way to get over to her, and she walked into the room where the sister worked, and the sister was crouched in the corner, just hysterical and crying and unable to speak, and there were 11 corpses in front of her because somebody had come, some militia had come and gone into the radio station and killed everybody there, and the sister had survived because she was 15 minutes late into work. That is not an unusual thing to happen. And what happened to Imad, I mean, the mortar landing, I mean, quite apart from what happened to him when he was filming, when the mortar landed in his house, he was just sleeping in his house at 11 o'clock at night, and these mortars landed, and suddenly, his wife and father were dead. I mean, that level of thing is happening all the time. It's very difficult to get your mind around it, actually.
I just also want to add my compliments and admiration to what you're doing. I was struck by how quiet the films are, and quiet enough that you can hear the sound of Iraqi voices speaking. So we wish you, I'm afraid I have to, after giving you my good words, our time is up this evening, but I'm sure if people want to ask our speakers some questions, they'll stick around for a few minutes longer. We'll look forward to seeing or hearing you on Leonard Lopate on Friday, and on the internet thereafter. Somebody asked me whether you have a tax-deductible account where people can make contributions, and I can look into whether, you know, we could provide any.
We'll set one up.
We set one up with Art East, maybe.
I know.
Or we'll see what we can do.
Thank you.
But I hope everyone will join me in thanking and wishing you all the best and good luck.
Thank you. Thank you, Anthony.